Good afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 4th of April, 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish. With me in the studio, Mike Robinson. Well, it's a lovely day here in Plymouth, and we've got a few reports of sunshine across the country. So the weather's looking up, even if politically not so good.
Yes.
However, we're going to start with good news, and we're going to say a big thank you to all of our viewers and listeners. Because it's quite clear that your help is now starting to push the viewing figures for Chief Constable of Wiltshire Mike Veal's open letter talking about his investigation into Edward Heath, former Prime Minister. So we regard this as being one of the most important inquiries going on. And we know that this very brave Chief Constable had to make this public statement because of the intense pressure that he was being subjected to.
And still is.
To drop the inquiry. So people who have said it's outrageous that police forces don't properly investigate, that we see investigation after investigation close down when lesser men than Mr. Mike Veal bail out. If we want the police to do their job, it's up to us to show the police that the public is fully behind them when they do. So if you still haven't seen the video, please watch it. And of course, once you've watched it, spread it far and wide. Thank you.
Right.
Well, war is a good subject to start on, Mike. And something interesting going on the press. I've chosen the Express here. Trump will back UK on Gibraltar as Spanish defence chief holds ISIS Pentagon talks. So this is an amazing article. It's mixing up the recent threats against Gibraltar that we are going to go to war against Gibraltar with the fact that no, the Spanish have been holding their own talks with the Pentagon and Trump's been quite friendly to them. First thing I'll point out is this mix of fake news, merging with war video games. So this is as it popped up on my screen. And before you comment, Mike, I'm going to say I don't watch video games. I don't play with video games. So this is presumably some form of targeting advert. But when you open the Express page, you're dealing with a very serious subject. And in the middle of it is a video game. But this was in the article itself. And what is going on here? Well, I think it's hype. This is to distract the public from other matters going on. And here we've got the Mail. PM would go to war over the ROC. Now, you commented on this yesterday, of course, Mike. But these Tories just love it. They are desperate to get the next war going, even if it's now attacking one of our European partners.
I mean, this is just so unlikely and incredible that what are they on is the question.
Well, I think they're on something extremely dangerous. But in a brief conversation with David Ellis this morning, he's of the same opinion that this is a smokescreen for other things that the government is carrying out. So don't watch the hype over Gibraltar. I'll have to bring this in from the Mail because it was so unbelievably childish. Who's got the biggest armada? This is the best the Daily Mail can do. And then it put down a comparison. What I find so ironic is that if we look on the Royal Navy side, of course, it's quoting Type 45 destroyers, which don't work in warm water. That's not a problem, though.
But it must be because there's warm water around Spain, is there not?
There is a little bit of warm water around the Gulf, around the Rock of Gibraltar. And of course, they ran into problems in the Gulf. So we've got Type 45 destroyers that can't work in warm water. We know that we're shortly will have no surface-to-surface missiles. But according to the Daily Mail, that's not a problem. Aircraft carriers, well, we're not even speaking about them at the moment because even if they exist, they don't have any aircraft. While surprisingly, the Spanish are still operating Sea Harriers that we've got rid of for, I was going to say a piece of junk. That's probably a little bit rude, but a defective aircraft called the F-35B.
I think it's a bit overly polite.
Overly polite. Yeah. Well, there you are. What's going on in the press? Smokescreen at the moment. Get people fired up over Gibraltar. Keep their attention off the really dangerous stuff happening elsewhere.
As we mentioned yesterday, Theresa May was in Jordan. And while she was there, she set out the details of a £1 billion jobs and education package to support the most vulnerable victims of the Syria conflict. She says overseas development funding. It's an allocation of £840 million of pledges that have already been made. So it's not really £1 billion, but nonetheless, £840 million already made and £160 million of new money. And this is apparently going to provide vital support to refugees and the countries hosting them across the Middle East. And this includes Jordan, where she was, over 650,000 registered Syrian refugees there. She is pointing out that this announcement has been made just ahead of a UK co-hosted Syria conference, which is taking place in Brussels later this week. And we'll have more details on that tomorrow, perhaps. And it builds on what she's describing as the UK's leadership at the London Syria conference last year. So we're providing all this leadership. It's fantastic. What is the support going to include? Humanitarian aid, including food, vaccinations, of course, shelter and basic health care for millions of vulnerable people inside Syria and across the region. Education for tens of thousands of children in Jordan and Lebanon over the next 3 years. I wonder what kind of education they're going to get, Brian.
I think they're going to get first-class British education, which will mean they will know nothing, but will be suitable for working somewhere at a very low wage.
Well, that may be the case. Another possible explanation is they're going to be filled with the Department for International Development's NGO-driven change agenda, and that these children are going to be brought up in the change agenda and then sent back into Syria. Where they will have
To ferment change,
exactly.
And that will fit, of course, exactly with the BBC Media Action programme.
So let's look at what Theresa May had to say. This ambitious approach agreed in London last year is delivering real results and giving refugees what they want, opportunities and education close to home. I think that what refugees actually want is just to go home, and for Britain, America and the rest, and all their trained terrorists just to get out of the country.
Out of their country. Let people go back to their own homes. Let them earn their own livings. Let them live in a country where society is arranged by themselves without interference by the BBC.
So another day and the same old rhetoric. This is Al Jazeera here. Chemical attack in Syria kills at least 58 people. This is the opposition saying Russian jets pounded the town of Khan Sheikhoun in rebel-held Idlib. And of course, who was reporting this? Well, the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, a reliable source, not. It comes with the usual package of images of children being posed in good lighting and so on. The report says that 58 people, including 11 children, were killed in an air raid that released toxic gas on the rebel-held Syrian town. Now, what can we say about that? Well, let's just remind ourselves about the reputation that mainstream media has when it comes to chemical and other attacks on the Syrian people, allegedly by the Syrian government, and bring up fabrication of BBC Panorama, Saving Syria's Children, Robert Stewart's fantastic blog. Go and have a look at it. He has a new posting here where he's asking, who are these men? And he's posted some images from video footage, which was linked to the BBC's Saving Syria's Children documentary. And there are some new individuals to be identified with walkie-talkies, at least one with an audio headset on. Robert's asking, who are these men? What are they doing there? One response that he got when he was tweeting this out earlier, somebody has pointed out that the person in the image on screen at the moment is wearing clothing from Pakistan or Afghanistan. It's the type of clothing which is never seen in Syria. So, you know, who is this guy? I wonder what the BBC can tell us. I don't think they can tell us anything. And sticking with Syria, then this little article has appeared on the Al Akbar website. This appeared on the 3rd of April in Arabic. And 21st Century Wire has had it translated. So if you want to go there and see Revealed, the story of President Trump's message to President Assad via Tulsi Gabbard. What the article on the Al Akbar website is saying is that the White House effectively seem to be using or have used Tulsi Gabbard as a back channel to Assad on behalf of Trump. Now, Tulsi Gabbard, we should say, has denied that she passed any message on behalf of Trump, but the article on Al Akbar describes what the message was. So we've got to perhaps think that Tulsi Gabbard doesn't really want to admit it at this stage because she knows the kind of flack that she's going to get as a result. But nonetheless, it's in the public domain now, so there's no reason not to report it. Apparently what Trump said was to ask Assad if he's ready to communicate with the United States, that Trump is ready to call him by phone. However, it should be known from now on that cooperation must be under the Fighting Daesh title. Trump is saying that the demand to remove Assad from office is not in his interests. So it's clearly somewhat of a shift in US policy. This looks like a pretty positive development, if it's true.
If it's true.
Yes. Moving to Iraq then, because that's another country that's doing very well at the moment.
Well, we've liberated it. That's the important thing to remember when we see pictures of the fighting in Iraq. We've been in there and installed democracy. I think that's a fundamental point.
Absolutely. Well, this memorandum of understanding was actually signed about a month ago, but it's only just been announced. The ambassador to Iraq and the acting minister of finance signed a memorandum of understanding. And under this new agreement, UK Export Finance will work closely with the Iraqi authorities to identify suitable infrastructure development projects to utilise UK Export Finance export financial support for UK companies. So let me understand this. We went into a country, we bombed the hell out of it. We destroyed its basic infrastructure. We're continuing to do that because we then imposed our own tame terrorists on the place, which we're continually trying to clear out of Mosul. So we destroyed their infrastructure, and now we're signing memoranda of understanding with our tame government, which we put in place in the country, in order to take finance from the UK to fund infrastructure projects which are going to be run by UK companies. That's a good deal if you can get it.
It is a very good deal if you can get it, but of course it won't even benefit UK because those profits are not going to help the UK public, and I'm sure most of the UK public wouldn't want to be benefiting from profits of this sort of work anyway.
Absolutely.
But who is putting these contracts into place? Well, of course, I think we're then starting to focus on what the City of London, what the UK PLC really is. It's despicable stuff.
Absolutely. Now, this was tweeted out this morning by Kenneth Roth. Why is CC smiling? Trump ignores his horrendous rights record and ensures no chance for journalists to ask about it. So this is Egyptian President el-Sisi visiting Donald Trump. He became the first Arab head of state to visit Trump in the White House yesterday. Trump praised el-Sisi. He said, somebody that has been very close to me from the first time I met him, had a deep appreciation and admiration for his unique personality, especially as he's standing very strong in the counterterrorism field. One of the responses to this particular tweet was, why don't you question the horrendous rights record of the Muslim Brotherhood, whose supporters target and butcher Christians in Egypt? Well, that's a good point. And in fact, Trump addressed that because he said that he was very interested in hearing President Sisi's views on the Muslim Brotherhood. And Sisi, of course, is there in the first place to try to get Trump to designate the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, if we're talking about human rights, let's just remember once again that Theresa is in Saudi Arabia today. Now, I'm going to say this is a bit of fake news, Brian, because that image is actually from her visit to Jordan yesterday, because they didn't have any images published yet of her visit to Saudi today, so yeah. I threw that one in. But nonetheless, she is in Saudi Arabia today, and we know that Saudi Arabia is the last bastion of human rights, Brian. I hope everybody appreciates the sarcasm in that statement.
If you want to install democracy somewhere, I think it should be the Saudi Arabian version, because that would be game, set, and match, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Okay, so the Prime Minister visiting Saudi today and tomorrow, she is going to make it clear that they are a close and important ally, and we will continue to work closely in a range of areas. Sorry, the British government and the Saudis, not me, will continue to work closely in a range of areas, particularly on counter-terrorism, where UK-Saudi cooperation is vital. And she's expected to explore ways of boosting a very strong trade ties between Saudi and Britain. Well, we know what that means, because Saudi, of course, needs to replenish their weapons cache, since most of it has been dumped on Yemen.
Lovely haircut she's got, though. I think is that a page boy or a bob? I think in line with the important news stories, there should have been some comment on the fact that a haircut is very smart.
These days, that's very true.
Yeah, excellent. There we go. Well, more serious things than the Prime Minister's haircut. On the 22nd of April, we've got the British Constitution Group moot, the meeting in Nottingham. Now, we know now that we can offer tickets on the door. We said a little some time ago that we weren't sure whether we would be able to do that. We are able to do that. So if you're going to turn up on the day, you should be able to get a ticket, but always better to get a ticket online beforehand. And also, just to spell out, this is not just for British Constitution Group members. This is for any member of the public who'd like to come along. And what are we trying to achieve? We're trying to achieve people to meet, mix, mingle, talk to each other and exchange ideas and expertise on what we are doing to try and counter this emerging dictatorship in the United Kingdom. So a very big space available. We can take up to 900 people. Tickets are selling, but we would like to see that hall full. So if you haven't got a ticket yet, please consider getting one, and also bring some friends, because the whole aim of this is to get people mixing with enough time to be there talking and, as we say, exchanging ideas. There are full bar facilities, so if you want to be just chatting with people and having a social drink at the same time, that is perfectly possible. And we are open to suggestions from the assembled company as to what is injected into each of the workshops, discussion groups, if you like. We've put out some topics as starters, but if anybody comes along and they've got a particular topic that they want to talk about, then this is the whole point of the venue. And I'm just going to pop this one up again. There are three types of people: those who are awake to what's going on and they're doing something about it, those who are awake and watching, and those that are still asleep. Now, we would like to see the awake and watchers and doers turning up to that British Constitution Group event.
Right. The Duran here. Russia launches super advanced nuclear submarine. This is the Kazan, second of the Yasen series of nuclear submarines, just been launched in the Sevmash shipyard, northern port city. Well, I'm not even going to try to pronounce that. And Russia has released a video of the launch. Get onto the Duran if you want to have a look at that. Now, the Kazan is a multi-purpose submarine, they say, able to launch both advanced torpedoes and cruise missiles of the caliber and supersonic Onyx families. It's significantly more advanced and powerful submarine than the first Yasen-class submarine. They're saying that although five countries, the US, Russia, China, Britain and France, build nuclear-powered attack submarines, with India having plans to do so, the Yasen class is a whole order of magnitude more advanced than the attack submarines built by any other country, apart from the US. And in fact, but they say that the only US submarine which could be considered to be as sophisticated as this is the Seawolf class, built in the 1990s. What's going on that technology is going backwards?
I think the first point here, Mike, is that what the Russians are doing is what you would expect any reasonable military to be doing, which is upgrading and replacing equipment. But we've now got this slight hype edge to it. So the Russians are bringing in new equipment. That's a perfectly normal procedure. But in the current climate, this is all hyped up a bit. But the Russians, of course, have traditionally built some really excellent submarines. Going back into Cold War days, a lot of the classes then caused big problems for anti-submarine defence for NATO. And I'm quite sure that the Russians are really pushed on with upgrades to those submarines. Contrast it with the situation of the Royal Navy at the moment. We know there's been huge problems in maintenance and crewing, but especially middle rank trained engineers. So we've seen huge problems with the British submarine fleet as a result of a government policy of neglect. And then the fingers pointed at the Russians to say, well, those naughty Russians are producing some really excellent submarines. We're going to be talking a bit more about defence in a minute and what's happening with UK. So I think, Mike, the Russians have got on with the job. They're building good equipment, and we're seeing it in the latest generations of their fighter aircraft, superb aircraft, at a fraction of the cost that it's costing the Americans. Or, I can't say the British, because we're not producing those aircraft anymore, but Western powers.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what have we got here? This is the state of the Royal Navy. We're getting very excited because the new tanker has arrived in the UK. And this is RFA Tidespring. On the 1st of April, it came into Falmouth in Cornwall. Where it's going to get some final fitting out. And the MOD's big boast is that this is going to create 300 jobs. So this is really good news, Mike.
Yes.
I mean, it is for anybody who gets one of those 300 jobs. But of course, on the scale of it, this is absolutely nothing. But the MOD thinks that this is something to be boasting about. So we did a little bit of research into this this morning, and what an amazing story, because of course, where were these ships? Where was this ship, and where will the other ships be built? So they were built in South Korea, Tidespring, formerly named at Daewoo Shipbuilding and Marine Engineering's Okpo Dong Yard on the 7th of October 2015, according to the Ministry of Defence. So brilliant stuff, Mike, because it's not even a question that the steel comes from overseas. We now get the whole ship built in a foreign shipyard so that we can make sure there's no jobs in UK, there's no skills benefits, there's no training, there's no apprenticeships, there's absolutely nothing for UK. You simply pump a lot of money into South Korea.
Yeah,
it's good. Well, we should praise this lady because, of course, Harriet Baldwin is the Parliamentary Undersecretary for Defence Procurement. And she says, backed by a rising defence budget, the delivery of the Tide-class tankers is a crucial element of the government's £178 billion plan to ensure our armed forces have the equipment they need. Now, we should remember, of course, that one of the primary functions of these tankers is to service the needs of our aircraft carriers. But just unfortunate that those aircraft carriers aren't operational yet.
And they don't have any aircraft.
But we shouldn't worry about that because, of course, according to Theresa May's Conservative government, Britain is regaining its place as a world maritime superpower. Well, let's have a look at the naming ceremony. And here we are. This is from gov.uk website. And what a happy scene in South Korea as some very interesting people named the ship. So I was interested with this gentleman, Lord Boyce, served with him when he was Admiral at Flag Officer Sea Training at Portland, when we had a naval base at Portland. He's retired, hence he's in his suit here. And his good lady wife has travelled with him to South Korea to name, I can't say a warship because it's a Royal Fleet Auxiliary. However, we're really talking Royal Navy. And we've also got George Zambellis, then First Sea Lord. So he's present in uniform and everybody's very happy that the South Korean workers are
benefiting
from the British taxpayer. Let's bring in the man himself because he had some words to say. George said, with the naming of RFA Tidespring, the Royal Navy looks forward to another new arrival into our future fleet. RFA Tidespring is another example of the mobility, persistence and flexibility of maritime forces. She and her three sister vessels are joining a renewed and emboldened Royal Navy, more modern, more capable than ever before. So what I picked up, Mike, was the madness of the futurist newspeak, because, of course, we don't have a proper fleet at the moment in any sense of the word. But he's looking into the future. In the future, we will have a future fleet, and that future fleet will be OK, possibly.
Yes.
So how has this contract worked? Well, we got very interested in this. £479 million given to South Korea. But not to worry, we've got 300 jobs. This is part of the government report. And what was interesting is it says that it's the result of successful collaboration between DSME and a UK company, BMT. Well, here's BMT. Encourage people to go and look at this company. Look at the people, a very strange mix of professionals, a lot of money interests. Where did they pop up from, and how did they suddenly manage to get vast contracts working alongside South Korea? Here's DSME, this website. Go and have a look at this and see the power of this South Korean firm. But, oh dear, as we dug deeper, we found that in 2016, there'd been a huge investigation into a mere £1.28 billion worth of, $1.28 billion worth of fraud at DSME.
Was any of that British taxpayer money?
Well, we have emailed Harriet Baldwin this morning to ask her that very question. But when we spoke to the Ministry of Defence media team, they got very, very hostile very quickly. So we're intrigued to know how much of the £479 million worth of British taxpayers' money has disappeared fraudulently as a result of this disastrous contract. But of course, the government wanted to do it because it could help to destroy British jobs. But not to worry, 300 jobs, and MOD did not want to comment. In fact, they were pretty aggressive. So I'll end by saying local Tory MP Gary Streeter, of course, did not want to talk to me when I asked him about the state of Britain's nuclear nuclear attack submarine fleet. Reports in the paper that most of the boats were out of action. Gary Streeter didn't want to respond. Instead, he preferred to get very personal. I went back to him, and here we were asking, we were pointing out that the reports were not even from the UK column. The reports were in the Telegraph and the Times, saying that there were major problems with the Royal Navy, but he just came back with, "I have no intention of engaging with you." Now, did Gary Streeter, did he actually know about the fraud?
Good question.
We don't know. So we'll wait and see how long it takes to get a response from Harriet Baldwin. And of course, if we don't get a response from her, we'll be straight on to Gary Streeter to ask what he's going to do about it as our local Conservative Party representative.
Of course, it wouldn't be the first example of fraud involving the Ministry of Defence if we were to say Al Yamama, for example, in British aerospace. And of course, when the Serious Fraud Office looks into the cases like that, Tony Blair loses the, or shuts the case down, and then the Serious Fraud Office loses the case documents.
Yeah.
So
this is democracy, of course.
Democracy,
Mike.
In action.
Yeah, brilliant.
Transparent. Okay, C40 Cities is running a forum today, the Financing Sustainable Cities Forum. It's supported by the Mayor of London, it's supported by the World Resources Institute, and it's supported by Citibank, the Citi Foundation. So that it's an action-oriented event, apparently. And it's one of the sessions that they were running this morning was all about climate change and climate finance. So, of course, C40 Cities, pushing the city's agenda. If you want to know more about the background to the city's agenda, do have a look on the UK column website, some of the articles there. But C40 Cities uses climate change as one of the main drivers for the city agenda. and also for sustainable development. Well, of course, people have been getting a bit upset recently that Donald Trump seems to be a little bit skeptical about the climate change story. Well, over the last few days, people have been getting pretty upset about Vladimir Putin as well, because he is now apparently saying that humans are not responsible for climate change. A whole range of articles and a whole range of different websites all tearing strips off him for the comments that he made. He denies that humans cause climate change, and so it goes on. Lots of them. Even more here. Putin defends climate deniers and looks forward to the Arctic melting, apparently. So what was this about? What did he actually say? This was one of the comments he made. Global warming may be more to do with global cycles here on Earth, or even planetary cycles. The question is how to adapt to it. He said, look, as I already said yesterday, I visited Franz Josef Land, and he was commenting on people visiting there in the past and comparing glaciers melting and making the point that, in fact, glaciers were melting already at the turn of the 20th century before the industrial impact that is blamed on global warming, that global warming is blamed on it at the moment. He said, in other words, warming had already begun. There's no such man-made factors such as emissions at that time, but warming had already begun. The question is now how to prevent it. Is not how to prevent it. I agree with those who believe that the question is not how to prevent it, because that is impossible. This may have to do with some climate global cycles and so on. The question is how to adapt to it. Mr. Johansson spoke about the distribution of fish, where they go, where they appear. Research is necessary. The question is how do mankind and people who live in these regions adapt to climate change? So the proposals and positions of those who disagree with their opponents, he said, are not so silly after all. So he has come out on the side of being slightly sceptical, and that's causing certain elements some discomfort, it seems.
Yeah, he says that humans are not responsible, and I have to say he's absolutely correct on that, because, of course, it was the Daily Telegraph that blamed Siberian ground squirrels and beavers.
So it was Putin's fault then?
So it was, it was Russia. Yeah, climate change is actually Russia's fault.
Yes. Okay.
It's getting very difficult to do the news anymore.
Yes. Let's move on to the BBC, because we know that the BBC is extremely balanced in everything that it does. But Nick Robinson has apparently said that the BBC has no duty to broadly balance any discussion of Brexit, because the referendum is finished, it's over, it's done with, the decision's been made. And because there aren't two sides debating anymore, there's no need for balance. So this is great stuff. He said that those who accuse the corporation of bias find it hard to accept that on the BBC they'll often hear people they disagree with saying things they don't like. Of course, much of the criticism has been about the pessimistic tone of Brexit coverage. And I think this is the point here, because the BBC pretends to be balanced by having people on that they say represent two sides of an argument, and they ignore the we can be a little bit sarcastic and so on, but we would never be sarcastic to a guest. Whereas these guys on Radio 4 Today programme or on Newsnight can be absolutely horrendous to their guests. They don't give them the opportunity to speak. They speak over the top of them. They try to distort what they say. So that is the kind of bias, I think, that Nick Robinson needs to be paying attention to. It's going to be interesting to see what happens, because, of course, the BBC has just had a new royal charter, and that has replaced the BBC Trust with a unitary board. And it now means that Ofcom is responsible for deciding whether and monitoring whether the BBC is being balanced in its reporting or not. They can levy £250,000 fines for every case that they feel is inappropriate.
I think we did a little bit of work on Ofcom, Mike, and if my memory serves me correctly, I think we were able to show that quite a few BBC people had drifted across to Ofcom.
That is true.
Spent a little bit of time and then drifted off somewhere else before drifting back again. So I'm sure the BBC Old Boy network would be capable of sorting out any little problems with Ofcom.
Okay.
If it was necessary. Well, BBC to censorship of the internet by Google. Yesterday, we were talking about the fact that Holly Greg Justice website has been taken down by Google. We put out the idea, the possibility that this was a result of letters that had been written to Nicola Sturgeon and the Scottish Government about everything from the conduct of the Scottish Child Abuse Inquiry to the release of tapes from court hearings involving Robert Green. We did send an email to Google yesterday asking them to confirm that they'd taken down the website and asking if this was due to an instruction from the Scottish Government. What do you think the reply has been, Mike?
Silence.
Silence. So it appears that Google, I'm not sure how many billion dollars Google is worth, but at the moment they're running scared of UK Column or anybody else who asks them a sensible question. So it is beginning to look like Google is happy to censor people who are trying to protect children from abuse. They're happy to do that. They're not so good on closing down the porn sites, but of course they are big on terrorists, as long as they're not the good terrorists.
But of course, Google can't go up against the government in any way, Brian, because if they did, they would maybe have to pay more than £30 million a year in corporation tax.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, we'll move on. So stay posted with the Holly Greg website, because as the new website has gone up, it's going to take a little bit of time to get information back up. But if we don't want the Holly Greg case to disappear, and we certainly don't want that, it's up to as many people as possible to start asking questions of the Scottish Government and indeed of Google.
Right. I wanted to highlight a little 10-minute documentary. It's a fantastic little documentary called The Bloody Line, just been released a week or so ago. It's a short documentary about the partition of India, and about particularly about the person who drew the line that partitioned India, Cyril John Radcliffe, who was a British lawyer and law lord. As I say, it's only 10 minutes. Watch it, share it, it is extremely interesting.
Excellent. Yeah. And the address there is on top of the screen
if you freeze it, yes. Now, finally, we're just going to end off with Samantha Baldwin. Now, this is the mother who appears to have disappeared with her two children. This follows on from her attempting to get help from social services because her children had made what some people are describing as horrific sexual abuse allegations. They had told their mother. The mother had attempted to go to social services for help, and now she's felt the need to disappear with the children because, as often happens, it looks like social services attempted to grab the children at this point. This Facebook page, the Women's Coalition, is covering this story. Now, they've said that today's update is that there was a crowdfunding page set up for Samantha. The family courts ordered for that to be taken down, so that has been removed. And they're concerned that the family court is also likely to try and get this Facebook page shut down. So I would suggest you get onto that if you're interested in this story and make contact with some of the people running that page so that you can stay in contact should Facebook be required to take the page down. This story is pretty horrendous, Brian.
Yeah, and it's got this inevitable template to it, which is that one parent does the right thing. They discover that abuse is going on, so they go to the appropriate authorities, child protection, and then very, very quickly the whole case is turned back the other way until it is the good parent that's branded mentally ill. The children are taken away from the protective parent, the good parent, and they're handed over to the custody of a parent who is quite often the abuser. Then either that parent subsequently loses the children to adoption or they stay with the abusive parent. And I was talking to another lady who's overseas, exactly the same case. But of course, British press simply not telling any form of balanced story over what's happening here. We simply get the line, which is reinforced by the courts. And of course, they are secret courts, no members of the public, no reporting in the court. They're not even courts. They're simply places where children can, if necessary, be stolen. So I think this is very, very sinister, this case. And the fact that authorities are putting so much effort into hunting down the mother, there is a lot more to this case than the press is reporting. So if you can do your own research, that would be excellent.
That's it.
That's it. Thank you very much for joining us. Remember that British Constitution Group conference. We really would like as many people there as possible. We know you have travel costs, but at the end of the day, we're just covering costs on the hall itself. So tickets, just £10. If you've thought about going but haven't made your mind up, then please come, because we need as many people as possible if we're going to turn this situation around. That's it. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back same time tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Sorry.